All right. This week on Lion of Judah Synagogue, we are continuing our study on the kings of Israel. We went through Saul. We're at David. Now we're going to go to a big turning point in David's life where he decides to test God and to see what's going to happen if he goes against the commands of God as the king of Israel. We're going to find out about that today. Welcome to Lion of Judah Synagogue. I am your teacher, Israel James Satlin. So today we are going to get into what happens when people turn against God. But first we got to talk about, I think this is around like chapter 10, if not chapter 10. What happens when the Ammonite king dies and his son Hunan takes over? And David doesn't really trust Hunan. Well, it doesn't say that in the thing. He might trust Hunan, but he sends some ambassadors over because it says that, really, this is probably the truth, but at the same time, David was known to do stuff like this. He sent ambassadors over to wish him well on his new kingdom because Hunan's dad was always good to King David. So he wanted to go above and beyond and send these ambassadors into the country to say, hey, you know, anything you need, anything you want, like my kingdom will provide for you. Well, I mean, any way that you can help us, we'll let you help us, vice versa. But all Hunan's friends decided, well, no, really, David's tricking us. And he's really sending these guys in here because he's spying on our country to see what's going on and who's in power now. So they shave the dude's beards off, half of them, on all the people, and took off half of their clothes at the waist and sent them home naked with half-bearded ambassadors. So when David found out that this is what happened, and it was like this with David his whole life, it was like, all right, David was really trying to take over and unite everybody, and then he would help everybody until they got spit on one time, and then he wouldn't lose it, but he would get infuriated. It would inflame him being disrespected because he knew that he was such a good person. That if the people were disrespecting him, then there was a problem with those people and not him. Okay, really, maybe Hunan didn't do it. Maybe Hunan's advisors tricked him, you know, but David took it out on all the Ammonite kingdom after that point. And he told all the priests that were half bearded and naked that had to run home to go stay in Jericho until their beards regrew. And I'm not really sure how Jericho still exists at this point, because I thought it was destroyed a long time ago, so I don't know. I'll have to figure that one out. Oh, I did figure out that it was Palti, not lentil, not petal. It was Palti. I had to think of it like a rapper's name in order to remember it. And there was another thing that maybe I said I was going to look up. It was right there, too, on that chapter. I'm going to have to get back to you on the next thing. I'll look it up again. All right, so back to the story. Palti was who Michael came from. That's what I'm going back to real fast. Was who Michael got taken from. That was her second husband. All right, but now, which kind of is going to come into play right now. All right, so after the Ammonites do this, then they go to war, and Joab goes to war out there with Abishai, and they have to fight on two fronts, and Joab takes the best men from his troop, and they fight in the field against all these Syrian refugees that are not refugees, but mercenaries that came from Syria, along with some people that lived in Tob, and like 1,000 from this king named Makkah. And then they go fight in the fields, but the Ammonites protect all the Ammonite kingdoms, so he splits off Abishai, Joab does, and says, you go take them, and if it gets too tough, call me, I'll come help you, and if it gets too tough in the fields, then I'll call you, and you come help me. And we'll play like that. Well, the Syrians took off, and then the Ammonites went back in the houses, and so Joab pulled his forces and Abishai and took off back to David. And then, except for some reason, David didn't get rid of Ben-Hadadezer. So now he's on the other side of the Euphrates, and he sends troops into the war. And when David finds out that he's back in the ballgame, then David's like, all right, I'll lead the troops myself. And he goes down there, and the Syrians flee again. And even Ben-Hadadezer sent his general, and his general ends up dead in the field. And I'm trying to remember his name. Maybe I'll look that one up for you and have it for you next week. So then all the chariots are down the field, 4,000 troops or 40,000 troops, something like that. 4,000, 40,000 are dead in the field, and the Ammonite and the Syrians would no longer help the Ammonites after this war. Okay. So then, David comes back, and when the wars start back up in the spring, like, David stays behind, but sends Joab out to get the Ammonites. But he stays back. Well, one day he couldn't sleep. Now here comes the turning point, and he sees a beautiful woman taking a bath across the countryside. Why she's taking a bath out on the open, who knows? But her name is Bathsheba, and she has unusual beauty. So David calls her over to the temple, and while she's there, he sleeps with her, and he ends up getting her pregnant. Except for she has a husband, Uriah the Hittite. And everyone knows it. So everyone is now involved in a scandalous game that nobody wants to be caught up in. And now David's thinking, like, what can I do? And this is what happens when you sin against the Lord. This is what everyone has to do in their head. What can I do to get so people don't find out that I did this? And David is now thinking, well, the only thing I can do is call Uriah to me. And so he calls Uriah and says, hey, what's going on, man? Like, you should go back and sleep with your wife. For some reason, this conversation comes into play. And Uriah, I think Uriah is kind of smart enough. He's like, no, I'm going to get killed on the way back home or something. So he's like, I'm just going to sleep inside the palace or outside the palace door. And so David finds him in the morning and says, what's going on? And so Uriah kind of makes up a story like, oh, everybody's out there fighting and I feel bad. I'm not going to go home and sleep with my wife who's already pregnant with your son, is what he's already thinking, probably. So David's like, fine then. I guess I could send you to the army if you want to go. And then David's like, I'll put you, doesn't tell him, but has him hand deliver a letter that says, put Uriah up in the front line. So if I was Uriah, I'd have been checking out that letter on the way there. Like, if it was my life we were playing with. Not that I would break the king's seal or whatever, but I would figure out a way to ask Joab, like, yo, am I going to be up on the front line just dying for this? Because anyone that's going to war has to think that about their leaders. Are they just putting me up here so they can wipe me out so they can live happy ever after? Because as a true person of faith in the God of Israel, like, that doesn't make the God of Israel feel real good, you know? So hopefully that never happens to anyone. But Uriah ends up going on the front line, and Joab brings them up next to the wall for battle and then pulls all the forces back. And supposedly Uriah dies. You know, you never know unless you have the DNA evidence, or not even DNA evidence. Since you have a physical body there. All right. So the story is, though, that comes back that, oh, yeah, Uriah died up at the city wall and Joab just messed up and now everything's okay, though. It's not too bad. Well, God catches wind of it and sends the prophet Nathan after David and says, yo, David, like, let me tell you a story. There's this guy who has all these sheep and this other guy that just has this one sheep that he really, really loves. And the guy with all the sheep comes over to the guy who has the sheep that he really, really loves and takes the sheep and roasts it and serves dinner with it. And David, he said, David's like, well, that guy's going to pay triple, you know, or I think he had to give him one extra sheep. He's going to pay, you know, more than he should for what he did for being brutal to that person. And Nathan's like, this is you. This is you. And this is why the Lord is going to exercise punishment on you, but he's not going to do it to you. He'll forgive you, but he's going to take it out on your sons. And because you committed murder, now murder is always going to be like part of your family and something you're going to have to worry about inside your family, which is important to remember if you're inside King David's family, huh? David accepts it, and he's like, oh, okay, well, that's just what's going to be then, except for the next day, his son gets sick, and then David, like, mourns and fasts for, and, like, is this totally in torment the whole time, asking the Lord to forgive him and just to reverse the punishment. And then the baby dies, and then immediately he feels better, and everybody's like, how can we feel better now? He's like, dude, there's nothing I can do now. The baby's dead. Like, and it's kind of like later in the story you hear a story about where life is kind of like running water. When you pour it on the earth, you're not able to collect it back up. All right, so we got through Bathsheba. So now, like, the kingdom, it's not like the kingdom's going to be ripped from David, but David's whole family is going to kind of pay a penalty here. Because David committed murder and went against the second, or the commandment about adultery. You know, so it's like double spit in God's face. And like, God don't like getting his face spitten as much as David doesn't like getting his face spitten. And God has a lot more people to please than David. So the point is that now we are to Joab's out in the field, and he eventually begins to take over the Ammonite kingdom. And so he calls David and says, yo, I'm going to barely take over the Ammonite kingdom. You better come in here and claim victory. So David does. He goes in there and claims victory. Well, then, I'm going to go as fast as possible now because now we got, okay, we're going to get to this. We're going to end on this, I guess. I wanted to get a little bit farther, but we're not going to. All right, so we got to get to this point that David has sons, right? Remember, Amnon and Aminadab. And I might have those Aminadab wrong. But Amnon falls in love with Tamar's sister and is just heart-wrenched over her and can't, like, sleep at night over it. And so then he ends up calling his sister in to make him food and ends up raping her, but then he hates her worse than he loved her and kicks her out. And then David finds out about it. Well, Amnon does too. Amnon, I might be getting the brothers mixed up now. All right, I'm going to have to go back and restudy this whole portion next Sabbath, which is where we'll meet again. But just remember this, that the God of Israel has a lot of people to please and has to stay true to the word of God. Otherwise, the word of God would be made null and void. All right? So that is this week's synagogue portion at Lion of Judah Synagogue. Shalom.
Your presence is all I see.